18 minutes after 9 o'clock, the inquiry into the fitness of two top national prosecuting authority officials to hold office also started this meeting. This comes less than 2 weeks before advocate Shamila Batoy takes up her position as the National Director of Public Prosecutions. Batoy's appointment is seen as critical to restoring the integrity of the NPA, as well as the inquiry into suspended Deputy NDPP Nomgcobo Jiba, as well as suspended Special Director of Public Prosecutions Lawrence Mrwebe's fitness to hold office. Well, to unpack the situation and to give us some context to the long-running investigation into the fitness of these two individuals is specialist reporter and journalist at TISO Blackstar, Karen Moon. Karen, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Now, before we get into the questions, let's just quickly take a listen to Mr. Zola Majavu, who is the attorney representing Ms. Jiba, and of course confirming that she was in fact formally informed by the Zondo Commission that she will be implicated by a witness and what the process they will be taking.
To be fair to the Zondo inquiry, as early as Thursday preceding, they had invited my client to a formal meeting with them, at which point they simply alerted her to the fact that a witness who is currently testifying may implicate her. However, as soon as that has happened and in the fullness of time, she, just like any other possibly implicated person, would be provided with the relevant documentation, which is the subject matter of the scope and extent of her implication. That has not yet happened. However, she made it absolutely clear to the commission investigators as well as evidence leaders that as and when that opportunity comes, she will gladly, very enthusiastically attend before the Zondo Commission where these allegations were made and then tell her side of the story. We also placed on record before Judge Mokoro, so she too knows that to the extent that they may have taken judicial notice of these allegations, they remain allegations at this stage, which she emphatically denies. And the commission formally confirmed that there is no evidence before it today, and therefore we proceeded on the basis that we recorded our client's reservations and we proceeded.
All right. That was, of course, Mr. Zola Majavu, the lawyer representing Ms. Nomgcobo Jiba. Karen, the strategy that is being taken by Ms. Jiba is interesting because if you compare it to, let's say, a Tom Moyane, there was always the delaying tactics, trying to tie the two processes, trying to hold things up. Do you think that she is going to take a different route? And what is behind the logic of her strategy?
Well, Karina, I think the really important thing to remember is that the GCB is going to be appealing that Supreme Court of Appeal decision,
yes,
which found that the High Court was incorrect to say that she was unfit to practice as an advocate. And that appeal is being heard on the 19th of March.
Yes.
So it's really in her interest to be seen to go through a process and to use this opportunity to place her version on record, because even in the GCB process itself, we didn't see that coming from her. Subsequently, she brought in evidence in those court papers. But she's essentially, you know, hoping, I think, that this inquiry will give her the right and the platform to really fight for her position and show that she is fit and proper. What's fascinating, of course, is that this is not a disciplinary inquiry.
It's, yes,
it's an inquiry into fitness. So the questions that, you know, the terms of reference,
yes,
are really about whether Kwebi and Jiba fulfill their responsibilities,
yeah,
as senior officials and complied with the Constitution and the NPA Act.
Now,
and
what is the bar? What is the bar, yeah, for fitness?
Well, you know, that's a bit of an interesting question, because as we saw with the inquiry into Lucy Dacoli, even if an inquiry finds that you are fit, it raises sort of issues about, you know, your understanding of security concerns.
Yes.
The president may still have a discretion to look at that inquiry and say, well, I respect your findings, but I find this issue is enough of a ground to find, you know, for me to remove you from your position. You know, it's really the terms of reference for this are framed very much in terms of the Constitution and the NPA Act. So, for instance, in the terms of reference that Ramaphosa has put forward, he wants the inquiry to investigate whether Jiba duly respected court processes and proceedings as required by applicable prescripts. So it's things about her conduct in the spy tapes matter, for instance, where she was part of a process that kept those crucial spy tape recordings out of the hands of the DA for years. Before they could finally bring that review that ultimately resulted in the president now facing the charges that he does.
Yeah.
Is that appropriate conduct for the person leading the National Prosecuting Authority to be in a process where the Supreme Court of Appeal makes very adverse findings against her for her conduct in litigation and her seeming lack of respect for how litigation should be conducted?
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Mruebe, I mean, he holds a very, very important position in the NPA. I mean, he's actually the head of the corruption unit. And I mean, he is severely compromised. Does his appropriate fitness relate to how he dealt with the entire matter of state capture or the Mdluli case? What is the specific findings of the lower courts against him?
Well, remember in the High Court finding, it was specifically about the fact that, he had been dishonest about the kind of engagement that he'd had with advocates in Zimnyati. In making those decisions around whether or not to continue the prosecution of Richard Mdluli. The charges against him are, well, the kind of allegations that have emerged against him are somewhat less serious than against Nonkor Bojiba, to the extent that the appeal court actually turned around and said that they felt that the High Court had been unduly harsh towards him. And of course, there's a very different line of logic by Judge Lahori in his High Court ruling, really stressing and emphasizing what is expected from officials in those positions in terms of honesty and adherence and understanding that if you put your name on a document that is stated under oath, you really need to be honest and be seen to be honest to the court. Ultimately, though, that issue also before the Constitutional Court. He is, of course, going, you know, and I agree with you so perfectly, his position is central. This is the aspect of the NPA that is overseeing the state capture matters.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's completely collapsed. And the reason why I especially raised this is if you look at the arrest of the Sanco president over the weekend, the shenanigans in Sanco, the Treasurer General went to go and lay a charge, the charges related to fraud and theft, and he was arrested. And the only person that could issue that warrant of arrest is, of course, Moiponi Noko, and she is the deputy. So you've got Shamila Batoi, who walks into her office on the 1st of February with two deputies who have been questioned by the court. So the process is incomplete. We still have a constitutional court hearing to be had. We have this inquiry. We have Noko in place overseeing the Zuma matter. I mean, Shamila Batoi is going to have her hands full.
I think that I would have a reasonable expectation that there has been an engagement between herself and the presidency about really looking profoundly at the upper echelons of leadership at the NPA. Because if the NPA is going to have any hope of redeeming itself in the eyes of the public and encouraging people to participate proactively in these kind of prosecutions and to come forward with evidence and to assist these processes, then it's going to have to deal with kind of these court findings, these very, very adverse court findings against these individuals. It's not simply allegations that are made. It's findings in court of law. For instance, the Gorvan judgment in KZN, which is one of the aspects that's being investigated against Jiba, about her, which led to her being charged with perjury, that she had actually been deliberately dishonest with the court. So, you know, I would expect that Shamila Batoi will have very firm ideas about the leadership structures that she wants around her. We know factionalism is a major issue that has defined the NPA for years now. Factions fighting with each other, using particular nefarious issues to undermine each other. It has to be dealt with, and it has to be dealt with decisively. And Shamila Batoi must know and expect that she has political support in pursuing a kind of process that will fairly deal with these allegations of corruption and remove people who undermine their reputation of the NPA.
Now, today, Mr. Silas Ramaita, the acting head of the NPA, was on the stand. What did you make of his testimony, Karen?
Well, he was really stressing the independence of the NPA and how important it was for an NDPP to be independent and to be granted independence. And he really hasn't, you know, done anything to nail his colours to the mast in any kind of profound respect in terms of what he makes of the conduct of advocate and Jibo Mukwege. Unlike someone like, for instance, Andrea Johnson, who came in and openly addressed the issues of factionalism. We saw this in his NDPP interview, and it was why, you know, many of the people on the panel adversely commented against him and essentially accused him of not taking the panel into his confidence and being open and honest about the issue faced. And I think that kind of trend, came forward in his evidence today. There was minimal kind of coverage of what he said. And I think, you know, people are hoping that as this process goes forward, and we hear, for instance, from advocate Jan Ferreira from the NPA and people who were involved in some of the processes that are intricately linked to Jibo Mukwege, that there will be greater candor in terms of what may have gone right or wrong.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, this is a process to look into the fitness of these two individuals. But Mr. Ramaiti is also no stranger to controversy. I mean, we've had the situation where he's been implicated in the sex tape. We have the situation where he was arrested on a drunken driving charge. We don't know what happened to the charge. It just disappeared. I mean, he's not exactly a poster boy for heading up the NPA. There's very little in Silas Ramaiti that inspires confidence. And again, I'm coming back to the point of the kind of people that Shamila Batoi will have to surround herself with in order to fix this institution when the list of people that need to be investigated, spoken to, and possibly be issued with warrants of arrest just grows longer by the day.
I mean, the terrible thing about, for instance, the evidence in the state capture inquiry at the moment is that Bosas is not just an exercise in a sort of, you know, basic guide to corruption and tender rigging 101. It shows just how fundamentally the NPA has been compromised for at least the last decade. Yes. That SIU report, which implicated Gavin Watson and senior Department of Correctional Services officials, came out in 2009. It was a decade ago.
Yes.
The FIU said there needs to be prosecution here. Nothing happened.
Mm.
There are now suggestions, and we haven't yet heard this evidence, but we've seen the media reports that, you know, prosecution officials, including potentially Jibo and Mukwege themselves, may be accused of taking bribes or corruption. Whether or not that happened, the NPA failed to act on solid forensic evidence. We saw an extraordinary situation playing itself out last year where the head of the SIU came on record and openly took on the NPA for failure to act on at least 483 criminal matters. So, you know, the NPA, I'm afraid, is past the point of dysfunction. I think Shamila Batoi is going to have to come in there and look very, and I think she will, very, very seriously at the people in top position, but also make kind of profound structural decisions. And she's hinted at this. She said she wants, a unit within the NPA that has the power to investigate. I think there needs to be renewed powers given to the SIU, for example, to litigate beyond the realm of just civil claims. I think that there needs to be increased cooperation between the FIC and kind of bodies that are able to assist the NPA with financial intelligence and prosecution of these corruption matters. But at this point, what we've seen from the NPA has not just been disappointing, it has been a complete and utter failure by them to uphold the mandate given to them by the Constitution. And it must change, because otherwise, you know, we have the real threat that citizens will just simply detach from any prospect of justice or accountability, and that is profoundly damaging for us.
It's interesting that you say this, because I've just gotten a WhatsApp text that says, I'm completely desensitized to these issues.
Mm.
I believe nothing is going to happen. No one is going to be held accountable. Increasingly, South Africans feel that the law enforcement agencies are simply on the side of those who have political power and influence and money. And I mean, that's a very dangerous situation to be in. And Corruption Watch is preparing an affidavit to explain how they understand how the criminal justice system was, in fact, captured first by President Jacob Zuma, who was obviously desperate to stay out of any court of law that would have to determine his guilt or innocence in relation to the arms deal. How important is it that Shamila Batoe gets right on top of it, especially also if you look at the failure of the asset forfeiture unit, for example, to properly prepare for the Isina Dairy case? I mean, it's the Hawks are beginning to openly say that the problem is actually with the NDPP. It's right there. And of course, the regional people are going to be critical as well, and the heads of these specialized units, the SIU, the asset forfeiture unit, is absolutely critical.
No, I absolutely agree with you. And what makes it worse is that we have evidence from Basasa, not only that the NPA, which possesses the constitutional mandate to prosecute serious corruption, but also Parliament itself, Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Correctional Services. On the evidence of Angela Greasy, there were key people, including Vincent Smith, that were receiving bribes. Now, I've tried all day to ascertain from Parliament what happened with DA member John Steenhuisen's ethical complaint to the Joint Ethics Committee. And the one of the chair people that I spoke to had no idea that he was even supposed to be investigating it.
You know, so the ethics... Watched,
but, you know, it's absolutely unbelievable that you can have this kind of issue on a platter with Vincent Smith admitting on his version that he received 671,000 rand in loans, from either, he says it was a personal loan from a Greasy. Of course, a Greasy denies it. And nothing happens to investigate how that could possibly be ethically appropriate given his position at the time. I mean, it's absolutely staggering. And Karima, it's gotten to such a brazen degree that even myself, or any ordinary South African, is going to look at this and just think, well, why do we even bother to report matters to the police?
This is exactly the point. I mean, the Ethics Committee has a long list of things. If you look, for example, at someone like Faith Mutambi, she was directly implicated in basically wrecking the SABC. I mean, the SABC is out of money. By March, it won't be able to pay salaries. She was meant to appear before the Ethics Committee. She's now been removed from Cabinet. One doesn't quite know how it works, but she's just not there. I mean, Lynn Brown has to go there. Mr. Bonga, who was the former Minister of State Security who tried to bribe Advocate Venara, is supposed to go there. And Parliament is just not in any way doing anything about getting the Ethics Committee to speed up any investigations in any way possible. I mean, it's basically just sitting on top of all the complaints, and people have already been taken out of their positions, moved on, and essentially creating the impression and the perception, most importantly. And we must know that politics is as much about perception as it is about power, that institutions are paralyzed, that there's a refusal to actually act against individuals.
And what we see happening more and more across all the kind of, with some of the opposition parties as well, is that when serious allegations emerge, we see this, we would welcome a law enforcement investigation. Precisely because people know that the possibility of there being any kind of outcome at this point, at this juncture, with how the security cluster, with how our bodies are working, are absolutely minimal. But the scary thing is that, it's become now about, can I be convicted in law of doing anything wrong? But there is no emphasis on ethical obligations of people who are mandated under the Constitution to safeguard the interests of society, to act with the best interests of ordinary South Africans. I mean, if your standard for leadership is that, I don't have a criminal conviction, then I'm afraid, that's a very, very, very low bar.
Absolutely.
And what is extremely disappointing is that, the ANC itself has the ability within its own body to, it has an ethics body that is meant to exercise oversight. Yeah. Where is it?
Exactly. You know, and the same thing, of course, goes for quite a few of the other political parties. I mean, you have someone like Floyd Chivambu, Julius Malema, directly implicated in VBS, Floyd choking a journalist, the EFF threatening journalists, particularly female journalists, and they are preparing their lists to become public representatives. Surely you cannot become a public representative if you have an outstanding issue at the Ethics Committee that is unresolved. I mean, Floyd just says no. He can't explain how his brother lends him money, and quite frankly, it's none of our business. That is in front of the Ethics Committee. These people are all gathering in their conferences, they're making their lists, and they're coming to South Africans and saying, vote for us. Surely those who have questions to answer in front of the Ethics Committee should not even be considered for any of the lists. And this doesn't just go for the ANC, this goes for all the political parties.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. But unfortunately, we have this culture where everything is deferred to criminal investigations.
Yes.
And the party itself says, well, you know, this is seems to take no active responsibility in terms of ensuring that their membership are behaving in an ethical and appropriate and honest manner. I mean, Floyd Chivambu's rhetoric is that he simply did not know that his brother was receiving, I think, about 16 million rand from you know, the company that was the major shareholder in VBS. He had no idea.
I think maybe, Karen, you should look closely at what it says the requirements are to be a public officer and to be a public representative, because maybe some citizens' applications can be brought against some of the people who are on the list. Because, I mean, I don't think a party that verbally and physically threatens journalists can expect South Africans to vote for it. You are basically going against one of the tenets of the Constitution. And I mean, that is some people will say it's mild, or it's a mild form of what is wrong. Other people are stealing millions of rands. But the point is, there are indicators for a democracy. And for example, if you are a party that essentially harasses, bullies, trolls, threatens, physically attacks journalists, how can you expect people to vote for you?
You know, I would love to see kind of a culture of leadership change within all these parties, be it the EFF, be it the ANC, where there's a real and profound and active attempt to say that, you know, we actually hold our leadership to our highest standard. Mm. We don't simply protect them because, you know, they're part of the upper echelons of this party. We really believe that when serious allegations are made, they need to be held to account and we need to properly investigate them. Of course, the EFF has said that it's done an investigation, and we have seen, you know, no kind of, we don't know what that investigation says. You know, we're just relying on their word.
Yeah.
But it is crucially important that, I think, you know, what you've said in terms of citizens actually actively demanding answers from their parties, and saying, you know, we want to know what happened here.
Yeah.
And another crucial point here, Karima, is that, you know, there are two very, very important issues that are currently being considered by President Cyril Ramaphosa.
Mm.
One of them is the signing of legislation that compels disclosure of party funding, you know, which has been sitting on his desk since, you know, for quite some time. And the other, of course, is this issue of, you know, doing lifestyle audits on senior government leaders.
Yeah.
And
I'm looking at one of the leading members of the South African Communist Party, Jenny Schreiner. She sits on some of the boards as well. She says on her Facebook page, vetting of ANC electoral lists should include the removal of anyone involved in gender-based violence and domestic violence, both of which are crimes, a violation of ANC policy, and inappropriate behavior for public representatives of people. Now is the time for wives, girlfriends, PAs, women to go to the Integrity Committee and report such instances. Too often survivors of gender-based violence and particularly domestic violence are advised to keep quiet. And this is, of course, a party that has its spokesperson, Pule Mabe, on charges of sexual harassment of his PA.
You know, I think the thing is that at this point, and I think that as this inquiry goes on and as these processes continue, and as people come forward in all aspects, be it this kind of domestic violence, be it the allegations of corruption, be it the non-disclosure of material interest to Parliament, you know, my biggest fear is that South Africans themselves just get fatigued by this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one of the common comments that you see on social media, that you hear from people that you engage with, is simply like, you know, I don't think I can actually hear anymore. Nothing surprises me. I don't have faith in the system. I don't have faith in any party. I've always tried to detach myself. And that's an incredibly dangerous moment for any democracy to find itself in. And I think, you know, the biggest takeaway from this is that, you know, these political parties need to make a decision. Are they simply going to give up any pretense of taking, you know, like obligations of leadership under the Constitution seriously?
Yeah.
Or are they going to really hear the kind of heartfelt desperation of average South Africans and actually illustrate that they are serious about wanting leaders in place that really act in the benefits of South Africa? And, you know, the Manara issue, unfortunately, is illustrative, you know, to a greater degree of a kind of, you know, legitimizing of violence. And, you know, while there was a court process, while he received a suspended sentence, there wasn't a real attempt to kind of hold him to account by the ruling party in a meaningful way. And that will reverberate for, you know, the hundreds of thousands of South African women who suffered domestic violence, who die at the hands of their partner, and who really don't see their kind of concerns registered by the actions taken by the ruling party.
Absolutely. Karen Moore, thank you so very much. A specialist reporter and journalist at TISO Blackstar, speaking to us there, of course, on the Commission of Inquiry into the fitness of two senior NPA deputies that, of course, is underway at the moment. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we open the lines. Let me give you the numbers again, 011-883-0702. You can also SMS me on 31702 and WhatsApp me on 072-702-1702.